Welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick, and I have our co-host Chris Lucian, and we're really excited to have Woody Zuhl with us again. And today's a special episode for us because it is our one-year anniversary of the show. It's been a really fun and awesome journey to spend it with all of you. And I don't know, Chris, did you have any reflection on the one-year benchmark here?
Yeah. I'm just surprised that we got here so quickly, and it's been a lot of fun. Thank you to all of our guests and everything. And I'll just point out that maybe you should buy fewer balloons next time.
Nice. Well, I can solve that right now. I can just turn off the balloons. I popped them all. They're all gone.
All right. Sounds good.
We're really excited to have Woody with us. It's a great time for him to come celebrate with us, the one-year anniversary. And I think we'll have some good topics to talk about. But for those who may not know you, Woody, do you mind giving a 30 or second or minute intro about yourself?
Sure. So I started programming about 35, 40 years ago. And I was attracted to programming because I needed some software that I couldn't buy. And then I loved programming so much that over the next few years, that became mostly what I wanted to do. And I switched my career to being a software developer back then, about in the late 90s. Over the next 20 years, which almost gets us to right now, I started realizing how difficult it was to do software development within an organization, and why wasn't it easier? And I started focusing on how can we make it easier. So I've spent 20 years doing that, another 15 before, working alone in software development when things were so easy. If you only argue with yourself, you win every argument, and it's really easy. It's easy to do. You win it no matter which side you're on. And so that's a short introduction to me. I was involved in mob programming, I would say, from the very start, but also prior to that, exploring pair programming and other forms of team programming, not just pairs. And I'm really glad to see so much of it being done right now.
Awesome. Yeah, it really has been fun to see the growth of it. And so I think that is a good intro into our topics today. So it might be a little bit selfish for me to use this episode to talk about this, but I think it'll be a really helpful topic for me. I used to think I knew what mob programming was, and you'd think I would know because we do a show on it. But I've been confused of late, and I've seen others a little bit confused. And so I thought it might be fun to talk with Woody about what is mob programming and what's more important than mob programming. And so I guess to jump into it, Woody, I've seen, I believe it was your definition, and I think at a place I've worked, it's on the walls with your name next to it.
Yeah.
Where it says, all the brilliant people working on the same thing at the same time in the same space and on the same computer. And then I've also more recently seen a simpler definition. I'm not sure if it was a definition, but it was basically, let's work together the best we can and continuously improve on that. So I guess for me, when you say mob programming, what do you mean?
Well, that's a good question. And it doesn't matter very much what I mean by that. So, you know, that's kind of the point to this. So we called it mob programming originally because I'd used that in a term in these coding dojos I had been doing as kind of a joke. I would introduce the idea we're going to do a communal coding experience here, but we're not going to do pair programming. We're going to do everybody programming. It's like pair programming, but with a mob. And so that was the joke, and that was based on a term I had read in an article that was written back in 2002 or something like that. That was part of turned into a book. It was papers that were presented, I think, at the Extreme Programming Conference back in 2001 or two. And the book was called Extreme Programming Perspectives, I think. And it's maybe still available. I have a copy of it. But I liked the term because of my own personal experiences. I think I got that book probably within a year or two of after it was published. And my experiences already were that if we keep people close together, they can collaborate more easily. I think the people who originally wrote the Agile Manifesto, the 17 people that were part of making that document, understood, I think they understood, that they, one of the problems in software development has been how isolated we are when we work. And they emphasized that in the manifesto itself by talking about collaboration in several places and making it easy for us to interact with each other was part of it. And then, of course, the principles reiterate that or reemphasize that in at least four or five of the principles or six or seven of them. There's some reference to the idea that we're gonna need to do stuff that we're collaborating. So to me, what it means, if we use it in the strictest sense, then the phrase that I like to use is, you know, all the brilliant minds working together on the same thing, same time, same place, and at the same computer. So I think those people who wrote the Agile Manifesto understood that and were actually saying, we need to figure out how to collaborate better. And that means shorten the communication feedback loops. We always collaborate when we're writing software. In the days when I worked alone, the first 15 years of my programming, I never worked with anyone else. I was writing software for myself that would be used by people in my company or by me, that I knew what it needed to do because I knew the processes we needed to automate. I was the only one to go to as a tester, so I tested it. I wrote the code. I was the product owner. In those days, we didn't use that term. But when you work alone, you shorten the feedback loop to pretty much the shortest feedback loop there can be if you can fulfill all the roles of the people you need to get feedback from. So Ron Jeffries and Chet Hendrickson talks about this. I don't know exactly how they're going to present this over time, of the idea of what if you could work with a group of people as if you were working with yourself? And I think that's kind of a brilliant way to think. So what is mob programming? I would, you know, like maybe in a more general way, say it's working in such a manner that we have eliminated the waiting time of communication, or we've emphasized the collaboration. So in general, mob programming is how good can we turn up the good on collaboration? So if I'm collaborating with you in the least effective manner, it was like when I was first starting to work in companies doing software development. So 1998, 99, I started working for other people. I would be handed some kind of a document of something that needs to get done. Here, this is your assignment. This is how long it will take. Go get it done. Then you go start working on it. And the first thing you discover is there's not enough information here. I've done a bunch of workshops on estimates and no estimates. And one of the things that almost always comes up when I ask the question and I do an information gathering with post-it notes and so on, I ask, what do you do when you are asked for an estimate? I'm usually asking people involved in software development. That's all I'm ever talking about. And one of the responses that is the biggest grouping is I get more information. So why do we need to, when somebody comes to us and says, I need an estimate for this software that we need to write, it could be a feature, it could be some bug fix, it could be some huge project. If somebody comes to me and says, hey, I need an estimate for this, should we be able to assume they've already defined what it is they want us to estimate in such a way that we can, conceivably at least, estimate it? And but this kind of tells me, and I've done dozens of those workshops and other little meetups and stuff where I've asked that question. And almost always we get back this thing, I get more information. Well, why do we need to get more information? This is about collaboration. If I'm sitting with the person, or if I am the person that knows what this software is supposed to do, I can just start in on it. And pretty soon I'm gonna find out that the product owner, if I'm the product owner and the coder, that the product owner didn't know what he wanted, right? I will find that out as soon as I start writing the code. Within a half hour of starting, I'm going to start going, oh yeah, maybe it can't work exactly that way. Or, oh wait, that's not going to be the best thing. Here's a better thing. I'm going to start discovering. So this is what collaboration is about. The person trying to invent what the software is supposed to do and the person who's going to write it, both need to collaborate in real time all the time. So if MOP, if we could, if MOP pro, well, let me put it this way. We need to do that if we want to eliminate the queue time to get answers to questions. Now, we have all kinds of ways of managing around that. But the final point here is that MOP programming, to me, is turning up the good on collaboration to whatever degree so far we've been able to do it. And I'm sure we'll get better at this over time. I just watched, how many of you, you know, out there have just recently watched the Rise of Skywalker or whatever? Because it just came out on the internet, okay? There you go. These two people, one's on an island, someone's in some miserable dark place, and they're communicating with each other. You know, in real time, they're thousands of miles apart, millions, I don't know what.
It's kind of like what we're doing right now.
Yeah, if we could communicate that way all the time, then there'd be a big benefit. And of course, in that movie, I'm not going to give anything away, but I think in the long run, there was some kind of benefit to that.
Yeah.
They were working out all the problems of the, basically, of the end result they were trying to get.
So you'd say that MOP programming more relates to optimizing for flow efficiency and communication, maybe? Is that a concise way of saying it?
Yeah, so flow itself is what I believe right now is one of the very important aspects of it. There are many others, but that might be why. How is it that this can be effective?
Yeah.
And I believe it can be effective because it basically fulfills the concept of flow, that we're not waiting. We don't have any queuing time.
Yeah.
In accomplishing our work. We will still have, there'll be times when we won't know what to do. And we need to figure that out. And that's a big part of what software development is about anyways. It's discovery of the, what is it we're trying to do? Not only discovery of how are we going to do it. I think that's one of the problems, you know, that the Agile Manifesto was trying to basically address. We think we know what we want before we actually start working on it. And there's a lot of work that's done. And it's basically, you can think of it as being baselined, signed off, and hand it off to another group of people that can do the work.
Yeah.
I saw an example. I'll try and think of what this was. It was quite simple. But let's play a tic-tac-toe game together, but without using any marking devices, right? So you try that with a 3x3 grid, and most of us who have been around for a while can kind of handle that. Let's turn it into a 4x4 grid. Let's turn it into a 5x5. Very shortly, and that's it. That's not something I invented. I read that in a book recently. I think that might be in the dialogue mapping book, but I'd have to look it up. Anyways, this is one of the problems, you know. So it's in the doing of the thing that we're going to discover what we need to do, and it's going to change. We cannot know ahead of time what we actually want to end up with. We can know the end result as a lofty goal or a big picture kind of a thing, but we can't, and this is the beauty of MOP programming. So the definition I would have of MOP programming is going to be, we've turned up the good on collaboration to whatever degree with the people we're with, we can do that. And when it is that original idea of all the brilliant people sitting at one computer, that works really well. If you can get good at that and then extend it beyond, it's possible.
That reminds me of kind of a story just talking about the communication. But when you and I started working together for the first time, Woody, and this was before MOP program, before we discovered it, and kind of started talking about it and naming it and whatever. I started working with you, and we kind of had like a large stack of requirements documents for the first project that we had. First thing we started doing was talking to people in the business and actually going to the people that asked for, you know, this large stack of requirements to be completed, and just getting piece by piece. And it was such a different way of working that kind of rocked a lot of things. And it was kind of like MOP programming was a natural extrapolation of all of that. We kept optimizing the communication across the business together, and gradually over time, people just became more and more accepting of working in such a way where communication just became faster. in being forced to go remote recently and things along those lines. I even see that going up another degree where we have more business counterparts sitting in the meetings with us while we're doing the work. And so it is gradually becoming that a similar analogy to the I'm working by myself because everybody needed is present, right? And over the years, what I've seen is, you know, we had testers in QA, and then they became part of the team, and then they were the mob, and that is like happening to other aspects of the work, and more people are joining us in that collaboration, and that's been really cool.
So there are kinds of work we can do alone,
yeah,
and are just as good being done alone. Mm-hmm. And there are kinds of work that we just absolutely can't do alone. And, you know, good, typical, easy examples. I can go outside and get the hose and move it to another part of my lawn. I can pretty much do that alone. I don't need a group to do that. But if I'm going to move a couch up the stairs through a hallway and into a room, I pretty much need some people to help me. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of work that we can do that is alone. And there's work we can do that needs to have collaboration with it. I've got lots of examples from my life of work. But what I noticed in coming to software development for companies, almost every firm starting in 1999 separated people into separate cubicles to work. Mm. And that seems effective. Now, I heard a story from a gentleman who used to design offices or was part of the group's that were designing buildings that were used for large communications firms back in the 50s. And they designed rooms for programmers as being 12 by 12 foot rooms where they had their books, their computer stuff, whatever it happened to be. You know, they, I don't know if they did punch cards or whatever, they wrote their work out, and then they had to go get access to a computer. And they made those rooms individual rooms. You could get in the room and lock the door from the inside, and that would make a little sign come up that said, do not disturb from the outside. The idea being that we need to sit and think alone. But there are people who worked in the bigger world of this back in those days as well, who wrote things like, the guys who kept their doors open seemed to be working on the more meaningful stuff. And hopefully there were some women there too, but I think in those days even, we saw the gender inequalities that we are dealing with now. The point being that the collaboration was needed even then. When we think we can work on something alone, I would challenge anybody to bring something forward in software development that they overall worked alone on. Most of the time, they communicated or collaborated with many other people in highly ineffective collaboration mechanims.
So even downloading a library, right? Like
a library.
Exactly. You had to have used an API to communicate, right?
And this is exactly the point. If I were to read a book, there's a kind of very narrow collaboration. Somebody wrote the book. I don't really get to communicate with them. Maybe I can find a way to send them a letter, or nowadays just tweet out a complaint about them on Twitter. And we're not back and forth on this. Whereas nowadays, it is a little bit easier to do that remotely, clearly. But there's a form of communication. Somebody wrote something, and then we read it or use it or whatever it happens to be, or watch it or whatever. So if we take collaboration to its fullest level, to the point where the moment we need something, we have access to it. What difference will that make? Will that be better? Will that be worse? I have a great example from back in 1999. I had worked on a project that was really quite good for 3 months. And you know, some of you guys have met my little brother, Fred, and it was working with him. And he brought me in on something that he needed some help with, not that I could help him all that much, but he needed the specific things I would do. And we had a team of five or six people, and we all sat in the same room. And that was not mob programming, but that was a very similar concept. You're there to have the conversations exactly the moment you need them. I went from that to another place where everybody was in cubicles. There was about 200 developers. That contract ended. We got done with that work. I went on to something else. And in that contract, almost everybody was in cubicles. But I was one of the last three people hired. and they had run out of cubicles. So they took the team that I was being put on, they emptied out a conference room, and they put seven of us sitting around the table, each with our computer on the table.
Yeah.
And I began noticing almost immediately that our work of our little team was getting done more completely, more correctly than the people who were working separately in cubicles.
That's we're not.
What's that?
That's fascinating. I have a similar story. I don't know if
let's hear it
more. Yeah. But the place that I was working before, I think I talked to you a lot about it when we first started working together. Myself and a peer were both promoted into management roles at the same time, and we took very different approaches. So they only had one office between the two of us. I opted to have him take the office, and he took it. And gradually over time, our management styles, the team's performance, everything very starkly started to contrast. And so I didn't really think about it until now, but you saying that story also offered me an opportunity to have that high bandwidth communication, because everybody on the team working on the software together, there's about four of us. We would just bounce things around the room and say, hey, I need this. Can you do that now? And there was a lot of serendipity that came from me being out of that one office, and I could give real-time prioritization that wouldn't have been available to them when this other manager, who was essentially exact same time promotion, just the separation of the environments had such stark differences. It may have been related to philosophy around management, but I think a lot of it also had to do with just the sheer free flow of communication that was happening there. So it's an interesting thing, because I think that through serendipity, I found myself in a similar space.
So there's a huge value in doing this stuff as a group. And the serendipity is, I would say, so you just mentioned the word serendipity. Whatever happened was what was going to happen. Whether you noticed there was something good about that or not, that's a whole different thing. And that's the serendipity of it. If we're paying attention to what's going on and something good happens, and then we say, oh, that was actually an improvement, and we note that and attempt to achieve it again, we're now taking advantage of that serendipity. It's just like, this is kind of silly maybe, but the very first time I ever had sushi with masago, I'm not sure how to say it, fishing. I want to say masago, but I'm not sure that sounds like the right way to say it. The first time I ever had it, I was on a vacation. I think we were in British Columbia. And so I went to a restaurant, just got some sushi. This is probably 20 or something more years ago than that. And I liked that. So the chances of me going to a restaurant that was serving that at that time was probably quite slim, because I've had it many times at other restaurants and never had that. So then I started asking for it. So if I hadn't noticed what was the difference between this and that, that wouldn't have become one of my favorite things to have.
Yeah.
If we watch for those things, which we all do in our lives, and we allow them to, we take advantage of them and we try to get more of it, this is taking advantage of the serendipitous thing that it occurred. Now, this thing that I noticed, I'm saying back in 1999, I start taking notes. That was the beginning of me going, that whole project was horrific. It was really terrible. But I noticed on that particular team, the things that were happening, that if somebody on one of the workstations say, hey, the database is down, then we all could focus on figuring out what to do about it. Whereas the ones that were sitting individually in their cubicles, they didn't have anybody to communicate this with. And over these little things would happen. And what I noticed from that was that we quickly got information that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And that they talk about this as being osmotic communication or learning. And I think that maybe I first heard that from Coburn from the Agile Manifesto. What's that?
Learning through osmosis.
Yeah, osmotic learning, I think they call it. And the basic idea, though, is that if you accidentally overhear somebody saying, oh, this library is no good, then you have a benefit that you might have had to spend the same amount of time they spent. And it was just an accidental communication. Now, others will say, hey, but that's all interference. That's noise in my system. But if we're all working on about the same thing, which we basically were, each team at this particular thing, we're working on one basic set of features that were interrelated, then it maybe it isn't. Maybe it is a good thing. Maybe it's not a interference or noise. We have to be able to identify what is noise and what is useful and learn how to emphasize the useful and eliminate the noise, or at least to some good degree. My approach to any of this, and this is why I really liked mob programming, is that we were focusing on how can we improve. One of the things was, so I pride myself, maybe foolishly, on having spent the last 20 years paying a lot of attention when people didn't think I was paying attention. So this was in companies that I worked at, and I was taking notes. I still have some volumes of notes somewhere. Yeah. Taking notes of all the things that seem to be working and not working, and trying to get the information on why. I saw a group working on a what we might call an N-tier application for about 6 months, but it was a client-server application. So if you remember what those architectures are, I kept kind of saying to them, "You keep calling this N-tier." Which is sort of where we're at now. I think we've got into the original idea of what an N-tier might be.
Serverless or microservices versus a box connecting to another box connecting to a cylinder, right?
Yeah. And in those days, it really was the cylinder which had the database on it.
How many of those did we make together?
And the box. And so, but the thing was, as I took those notes even on that one, I kept saying they're not going to solve the problem they're sending out to solve because they can't even see that they're not paying attention. That's all I wanted to say about that. So as I took notes on that and watched it and I followed them over the next few years, that was a few years before you and I, Chris, worked together.
Yep.
But this idea that we are not communicating well, and that's probably more important to mob programming to me than almost anything else, is we need to figure out how to communicate well, because communication almost always does not happen. Whenever I say something and I think you understood it, there's a good chance that's the moment that I'm the most wrong. During this whole thing that we're talking today, and everybody out there who's listening to us will be paying attention to different things at different times and not to everything we're saying. And I might not be saying things in a nicely interconnected manner so that the ideas are just evaporating and nobody out there can even get.
It's many aspects of replying to it from different angles and bringing all of that, so a lot of this is situations where many different sources of information come in from many different avenues, right? But when you're mob programming, you have that all together at the same time.
Yeah. And all right. So all very interesting stuff. So to kind of circle back, Woody, to the original question, I think it was incredibly helpful for me. My clarity has jumped up several levels. So thank you. I will attempt to summarize, and then we'll see where that leads, and then we'll close out the episode. So what I kind of took away is that there are possibly maybe two meanings to mob programming. One could be in like the pragmatic practice sense. You know, that's kind of all the brilliant minds working on the same thing at the same time, the same space, on the same computer. That feels very like actionable. You can do that, right? You can experiment with that. You can try that and see how it goes to turn up the good. And then there seems to be like a meta, higher level lean thing going on that could be maybe a second meaning to mob programming, which is let's work together and turn up the good. And as Chris said, optimize for flow, efficiency, and communication or something like that. So that's what I took away with, is that those two possible meanings. Any thoughts or corrections to that?
Yeah. So I believe the reason mob programming works is because it enables flow. There are other things too that are happening. So we need to get good at collaborating to be able to do a decent job with this of mob programming. mob programming is one way to achieve flow. It just came for free. That's the point. When we started working as a group, we noticed the very first day, and it was by accident that we'd worked this way. The very first day, we wanted to do more of it tomorrow. So that is the gut feeling, like, boy, something was going good here. I got something better on my sushi than I used to get. I liked it. I want more of that. And so because we were training ourselves or exercising or practicing the idea of trying to get more of whatever worked for us, we kept doing it. So what we noticed, I would say, on the very first day was four things I like to think back, that we were getting, that we were learning a lot, that we were getting a lot done, that it was very high quality, and it was fun. And any one of those is enough for me to say, I want more of this. Any one of those would have been great. Matter of fact, to take it a big step further, if all of those were about the same as when we worked alone, then it would make no difference whether we worked together or worked alone, and we could choose between the two, and who cares? But we found it was more of those things, and we just kept turning up the good on that. Yeah. Like, how can we make this better? We were going from room to room originally, and we found a room we could just be in, so we didn't have to go from room to room, carry our stuff, and take pictures of our whiteboards and stuff like that. And so every time we did this, we improved it. So all mob programming is turning up the good on collaboration in one direction. And if we can do that, if everybody that tries these ideas is thinking about that, how can we improve collaboration? That's good. This, but the idea of the flow is all of a sudden we realized, and I think it took us about a year to realize this was what was happening to us. I'd say by 2 years of doing it, we had started really understanding this was about flow. If you can achieve flow, whatever you can do to achieve that, you will get benefits. So you combine those two ideas together. Mob programming is one way to accentuate or enable high level of collaboration, as long as we get good at working that way. And one of the big benefits is we get this idea of flow. And the flow is something that's hard to get any other way I've seen so far. I'd love to see what other people are doing. I've seen people write about it, but I think this comes for free when you start mob programming, if you focus on collaborating well.
I think that you touched on something really interesting there, and that's that maybe we should rename mob programming to Masago programming.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I've always taken pride in the idea that somebody in Japan has to use a word we sort of finalized on, rather than us just using words that they finalized on.
We'll
say katas and dojos and kaizen and all these things, and it's kind of nice to think that we actually have given them back a word that doesn't really work well.
Mabu pro is what over there.
I love it. This is a worldwide thing.
Yeah,
everybody in the world already is enabled to work well with others if they're willing to do it. So that's what I like to say. I have certified the entire world's population as you are all certified mob programmers. You just have to do it. Mm-hmm. And then so you don't need to pay me to become certified. You already are. That's a birthright. You got that by being a human. So just let's do it. Let's mob program.
Awesome. All right, Chris, I think it's time to close it out.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for our 1 year anniversary episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you think that anybody would be helped by any of these concepts, please share this video with them, like and subscribe. And thank you again, Woody, for joining us today this very special episode for us.
Well, thanks so much for bringing me along.
All right. Well, thank you very much from the show. Bye, everybody.
See ya.